Welcome to Oh Say Can You See. This is a television show on public access in Grand Rapids, brought to you by the CTV Society. We've been doing this for more than 8.5 years. And tonight we're going to be looking at an American apocalypse, the self-fulfilling prophecy that we deserve. It's a question, and we'll be trying to answer that question here tonight. With me here tonight, fellow members of the CTV Society, starting over here, we have Stephen Durst, this guy here.
That's me. I'm Stephen Durst.
He's Stephen Durst.
Right there, Stephen Durst.
He's Stephen Durst. That's Stephen Durst. Stephen Durst.
I'd like to say it's a live call-in show, and we'll be expecting your calls here in about 15, 20 minutes.
And over here, we have Dennis Smith, also a member of the CTV Society here
Dennis
in Grand Rapids.
Dennis Smith, here. Camera, please.
Dennis Smith.
Hi.
That's Dennis Smith. And Rick Chapla, one of our original members of the original Society for Economic Equality that preceded the CTV Society, and which itself also exists to this day. Rick Chapla, CTV Society, and I'm Mark Zafitowski, also a original member of the CTV Society and a longtime member of the Society for Economic Equality, which is not what you're seeing right now, but this is the CTV Society. I know it's complicated, but tonight...
We're the spin-off.
Nobody said it would be easy.
Like Rhoda.
If we could take a look at the New York Times there, it'll kind of put us in a time perspective.
Well, what's the New York Times going to tell us, Mark?
Well, the New York Times is going to tell us that the State of the Union speech, the last of Bush the Third's first term, was last night. And it seemed to not go as... well, in the polls, he's at about 45% major approval, they say now. And the Democrats in their opposition to Bush are at about 45% major approval. So the political nation state is up for grabs between Bush and his continued empire grabbing, and the Democrats and their sort of wimpy opposition to the Bush empire grabbing. We're going to extensively look at the nation from December 22nd of last year. If we could look at that nation cover, that was the number one on the stand. If we could, that's this. If we could, yeah. And this main article was by Robert J. Lifton, but there are others that that our panel read and prepared for. They read "The Religious Language of George W. Bush" by Juan Stamm. They read, I read "What Recovery" by Katrina Vanden Heuvel, and also several other articles. But essentially, the gist of this entire issue of the nation is the American apocalypse, that how superpower syndrome is ravaging the world. But not only that, clearly superpower syndrome is ravaging the United States, and more than that, sort of this apocalypse syndrome is ravaging the United States. A significant portion of the country seems to be anticipating apocalypse, and George Bush seems to be the preacher of the warrior nation marching to apocalypse, and it really scares me to death, and it seems silly, incredibly silly at the same time, to be equating our experience that we're actually living out with some kind of biblical born-again vision of an ancient Judah in opposition to a sinful Israel or something. I don't know. It's bizarre. So, if we... also, to put this in perspective, a year ago, we were here, a year ago today, tonight, we were here talking about the State of the Union address. And at that time, Bush was still explicitly announcing a triumvirate of evil, what are they, the axis of evil?
I believe it was 2 years ago. That
2 years ago, he explicitly said it, but 1 year ago, he announced he named Iran, he named Iraq, and he named North Korea, and talked about how evil they were and what a threat they were to the United States. So it was as good as, again, announcing the axis of evil. Could we run the first roll-in? Are we ready for that?
And what is that roll-in?
That roll-in that you're going to see was our response to the State of the Union. After we saw some of it, we started talking about it. And as soon as it's ready, I'd like to run it.
There you are.
Okay.
Here you go. You don't look a day over.
Who hasn't gone yet?
We can't hear it out here, though. Is there any sound?
Yeah, another 30 seconds.
I remember what you said.
Oh, come on.
I did get a chance to listen to some of Bush's speech last night, and I thought it was some of the worst horrible propaganda I'd heard since Ronald Reagan. But I was amazed at how many times the people would stand up and applaud him. And I really think that Bush could have farted into the microphone and they would have stood up and applauded him, because it didn't matter what he said or did, they were going to applaud that man. I think it's really scary. And I don't doubt that Bush could be the next Hitler.
The thing that I thought was kind of amazing was that, for my eye, I thought that whenever he made his most bellicose statements about pursuing the axis of evil, although he didn't use the term this time, when he was in Korea, Iraq, Iran, the Democrats and the Republicans all got up and hooray. You know, it's when he was talking about his various, you know, the only controversy is that he wants a big tax cut, you know, and then the Democrats would sit down. But if he said, you know, attack, then yay. So, I mean, you have Democrats going out now and making speeches that sound like they are non-supportive of the war, but they voted for his war resolution.
Right.
And they're standing and cheering, and they're kind of trying to have it both ways. They're afraid to get out there when they're not in front of a friendly audience or facing re-election and oppose Bush. So I'm not pleased with that either. We're ready for the highlight of the show, or the dark news of the show, which is the announcement that nukes are on the table preemptively against Iraq. Now, we can run that.
President Bush will also make that case to the American people on Tuesday when he delivers his State of the Union address. Fred, he'll be spending some time practicing on a teleprompter. Also, he's been spending quite a bit of time with his team of speechwriters going over several different drafts of that key point that he is going to be making. White House aides tell us that no, he is not going to be declaring war, but he is going to lay out a broad and detailed case against Saddam Hussein, that he is going to talk about the fact that this is the last diplomatic phase with Iraq, and also why it is that the prospect for war is very real. Fred?
All right, Suzanne Malveau from the White House, thank you very much. The pressure is on for Iraq. In a last-minute flurry of activity, UN inspection... The nuclear option is now on the table for Iraq. That, according to the Bush administration. Some say it was never off the table. Our next guest is James Walsh of Harvard University, whose work focuses on weapons of mass destruction, and he's in our Boston bureau. Good to see you, Jim.
Good morning, Frederica.
All right, so what is this about, this policy that the White House says it's old news? It's always been known that there could be plans for a U.S. preemptive strike using nuclear weapons.
Well, in some ways it is old news, but it's always been controversial. American policy on the subject of using nuclear weapons against a country that doesn't have them has always been sort of schizophrenic. The Department of Defense has staked out one position. They want to retain the right to use a nuclear weapon against another country, even if it doesn't have nuclear weapons, as a way to deter the use of chem or bioweapons. Other people have argued that's a very dangerous path to take, and in particular the State Department has taken up the other point of view and says, hey, we have treaty commitments, for example, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and that treaty is supposed to reduce proliferation threats. And the way you do that is you promise other countries not to whack them with nuclear weapons if they give up theirs. There aren't many countries that are going to give up their nuclear weapons unless you tell them we won't attack you if you promise to give them up. And so there's been a competing set of views here, and the difference has been split down the middle. It's done so by being vague and ambiguous. So during the Gulf War, there was sort of a vague big threat that we might use nuclear weapons, but nothing very specific. Here it seems, though, as if the preparations are a little more in the open and are more specific.
It sounds very specific. For example, here are the reported scenarios, two scenarios in which that preemptive strike would take place. Firing of Iraqi facilities underground by use of U.S. nuclear weapons, and a second would be to thwart Iraqis' use of weapons of mass destruction. A, how do you see that as being effective, and B, how would that work?
Well, let me back up on one point. You asked whether it was new or old, and what I was talking about was the general policy of deterring camera bio use with nuclear. The preemption part, that is brand new. There is no president in U.S. Mm-hmm. history that has openly advocated striking a non-nuclear country first with nuclear weapons. And how that would work, there's been a lot of talk in the Pentagon about creating bunker busters. They know that Saddam has German-made NATO-quality bunkers in which he could hide from conventional bombs, and what they wanted to do is design a bomb that would burrow into the earth and then set off a nuclear detonation and then take him out. Of course, you got to know where he is, and if you knew where he was, he probably would have been killed a long time ago. So I think it's problematic. There are problems all over the place here, and let me focus on two in particular. Mm-hmm. One, this gives Israel more permission, a greater ability to respond in the same way. If Israel gets hit with camera bio, do we want them to respond with nuclear weapons? By saying we're going to do it, I think it creates conditions that that's a more likely outcome. And secondly, I have to, just personally now, I think we have to step back and ask, how did we get here? This is supposed to be a war in the name of non-proliferation, to stop the use of weapons of mass destruction. And now the CIA tells us in a report that by attacking Saddam, he will use his weapons of mass destruction. And now we're saying we'll use nuclear weapons against him, or even first, and that Israel might also do that. So somehow, a war in the name of non-proliferation is a war all about using weapons of mass destruction. So I think somewhere along the line we've gotten off track.
All right. Certainly sounds like a major contradiction, doesn't it? Especially since you're saying you are in agreement that the use of preemptive is indeed new. It is not the same old policy.
Absolutely.
All right. Jim Walsh, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Frederica.
All right. CNN Live Sunday is back in a moment with the rest of the weekend weather word. And some crazy people will tell you what's making them.
No, run the crazy. Oh.
What's the point of that?
Well, see, the point of the rest of that was they just sandwiched that in a bizarre way. I mean, it went into an orangutan story, but anyway, you saw one of the scariest news reports I've ever seen. That was from
back to the real us. Yeah, that was a year ago. That was CNN from just before the State of the Union last year, and at that time, people were anticipating, you know, these invasions. We had invaded Afghanistan, which we still occupy. We were Bush was building up to the invasion of Iraq. We were talking about Iran. We were talking about Syria. We were talking about North Korea all at that time. And now, a year later, Saddam's been captured. And all of a sudden, people are thinking, well, Bush doesn't really mean to go on with his attacking thing. He's not going to attack North Korea. He's not going to attack Iran. Just a few nights ago, I saw, though, Richard Perle saying no to that guy on late-night PBS Charlie Rose. He was saying Syria is on the table. Syria should not relax. We very well might put the military option in terms of Syria on the table. And so Dean, he just lost his primary in Iowa after he was about to win, I think because the war thing is being relaxed. The people are saying, Bush doesn't mean to continue his war thing, you know, it's all over now. No, Bush really does keep his promises. He makes his promises to the hawks, and then when he starts to slip in the polls, he kind of lays low. But then after the election, I tell people, you've got to expect Bush to continue with his plan. And that's why I showed that, because, for instance, General Clark, he said when he went to the Pentagon, as soon as Bush came into office, Bush the Third, he was told by Pentagon people that he knows, a general, that expect, you know, make plans for the invasion of Iraq, because that's what the president's going to do. He's told us he's going to invade Iraq. Also,
papers came out, they showed they had post-Iraqi war ideas already, way back before they ever even talked about invading. That just came out just last week.
Sure. They had plans for the oil. They didn't have plans for the chaos.
North Korea.
No, they had plans for the chaos.
North Korea. Nukes are being talked about preemptively there. It really upsets the Harvard professor to realize that, well, that's what the White House announced today. People are relaxing about North Korea because they say, well, North Korea has nukes, so we won't invade them. And yet the U.S., the president, will not agree with North Korea to sign a non-aggression pact because his administration is going around saying we need the right to preemptively attack their nuclear installations. If they have nukes, doesn't that mean nuclear war? That brings us back to...
I don't even think they do.
That brings us back to the Hitler question.
They don't even have power or food. You ever seen the thing of it? There's lights all over South Korea. There's a line where North Korea starts and it's black. There's like one little light where there's electricity somewhere. It's probably where...
Well, Dennis, American inspectors just went in and saw the...
And they saw them?
Well, they saw the plutonium.
North Korea, I think, is much more dangerous than Iraq. If you're going to take out any regime in the world, that would probably be the one that...
Yeah, but...
Them or Iran, maybe.
Iraq was part of a larger strategic goal.
I think it'd be easy to go in and take care of North Korea. You don't have...
Not if they have nukes.
Well, do you agree that...
No, the preemptive strikes.
It seems like the people are continually, the American people as a whole, seem to, at least as a part of the majority that's needed to keep the nation calm, will say to themselves, there's no reason to worry, it's all over now. And yet,
well, Mark,
is that a false assumption on their part?
I think, Mark, what you're doing is you are kind of understating the danger. I mean, Iran and North Korea, I believe, are both very dangerous regimes. Now, that doesn't mean that the United States or anybody else, including the UN, has the right to overthrow them. I wish their own people would. They probably can't do that in North Korea, because that's so much of a Stalinist regime. I am hearing that there's some unrest among the public for reform in Iran, how viable that will be. But, you know, I think there's a whole lot of governments in the world, and I have to agree with John Kerry, the present one in Washington as well, should all be changed. But I would hope that it would be done in a peaceful way, or at least by the people indigenous to their own country, rather than the United States and Britain or some international force.
May I say something? The topic is the article American Apocalypse, and where he's defining the apocalyptic mindset in the article, he points to Osama bin Laden as a good example of it. Someone who thinks that they can rid the world, that they've been rid the world of evil, they've been divinely chosen.
Right.
And Bush also has this mindset, and he surrounds himself with men who have this mindset, including Richard Pearl. People who believe that they are so good that they can rid the world of evil are about the most dangerous people there are.
They would say not that they're so good, but that God, whoever their God is, has chosen them.
Right.
Bush has used, in another one of the articles that was part of that edition, other than American Apocalypse, we had Bush's religious language, which was from the December 22nd, 2003 issue of The Nation. In that, Juan Stem says that Bush uses very apocalyptic language, very manichaeistic, very, you know, ultimate evil against ultimate good, cast in biblical tones and language. And this is resonating with all that TV evangelistic born-again Christian stuff, where it's also extremely black and white.
Well, I wonder whether Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, Bush, and Cheney really believe that they're the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Ashcroft.
Or whether really, Ashcroft and Rumsfeld are really weird. And, you know, they did like that 2-year boot camp where they studied the Book of Job.
I'm not aware of that.
With Bush, George Jr., after he got his
driving. No, not the Book of Job, the Book of Matthew.
No, it was the Book of Job.
No.
I just read it in...
All right. Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, they asked him questions about it, and he didn't even know anything
He said, well, my
and he got really angry about
Book of Job, and it didn't equate to what they were talking
but
about.
But what I'm saying is...
You're talking about Dean.
Whether they really believe
Dean.
That they're...
You've got two things...
Yeah, you're confusing Dean and Bush, and they're both a little goofy, but...
All right, I'm confused anyway.
So are they.
And it's very confusing.
That's the point. We're all confused.
There's so much going on. It's very, very confusing.
In all this confusion, most of the American people end up believing illusions, you know, about the apocalypse and about weapons of mass destruction. Even though Bush doesn't necessarily come out and himself say, he has nukes, he has this, he has that. He ran his planes into the into the skyscrapers. People ended up believing that Saddam Hussein was with Al Qaeda, and he had nothing to do with Al Qaeda.
It was a 2-week period where he went around making speeches where he said he's got ties to Al Qaeda.
Well, yeah,
you know, he made these little statements, and after 2 weeks of saying them, everybody said,
if you look at
Al Qaeda.
We got to invade.
As a matter of fact, Osama and Hussein did not get along at all. They're totally different ideas. Hussein did not like.
They didn't like each other at all.
Not at all.
Two gangsters don't usually get along.
Two thugs.
But I was going to say, Mark, you know, the idea that you talk about the American people being so confused, the very fact that 50 million people, which was 500,000 less than Gore got, 50 million people would vote for a total idiot like George Bush, who never did anything successful in his life, and now think that because he goes to church and waves a Bible around and doesn't fool around with interns in the Oval Office, that he's some kind of a moral Christian. If people will believe that scenario, they're probably liable to believe anything.
But he himself seems to believe it.
Wait a minute. Now, that's the point I was saying. Do they believe it, or are they using that as a ruse?
Is it cynical or not?
Because everybody's like, the end of the world's near, the end's coming soon. Are they using that or do they believe it? Because I don't know.
Why else would you attempt to self-fulfill the prophecies of apocalypse unless
greed?
You actually believe?
Wait a second here.
I suppose greed could do it.
I'm going to bring this, as long as you're going to bring up the apocalypse, which is another word for revelation in the Bible, I don't think most Christians really believe in this scenario. This is something called dispensational premillennialism, which is very much a minority point of view within the Protestant Christian community. Well, I just wanted to finish the thought because and it is strictly Protestant. But I think most people believe, if they're Christians, that they're just going to die and go to heaven. They don't get into all these end time scenarios. So I don't think Bush is really doing that so much from that perspective. I think he's just trying to scare the population. And there very definitely is a scary thing out there called Islamic fundamentalism. But there's also a very scary thing in America called Protestant fundamentalism. And
Zionist fundamentalism, don't forget.
Possibly.
It's at the crux of the whole matter.
Bush is pandering to that. You bring up a good point, Steve. A lot of that, I think, is somehow the Protestants are pro-Israel, but yet they think Jews are going to hell. And I don't quite understand that scenario.
Because they want to collaborate with the Zionist Jews to bring about apocalypse, because that will... When those Jews build the second temple, that will be the sign that Christ is coming. Mm-hmm. I was raised this way.
What are people like Richard Pearl and Wolfowitz and all these other characters doing hobnobbing with Protestant fundamentalists? They've got to know that these people think if they don't change their thinking religiously.
Yeah, they get their angle.
Look at Richard Pearl.
Must I?
Why does Bush hobnob with Richard Pearl? Because they're conspiring together to create...
Maybe none of them.
You might be right. Some people might be cynical about it. Maybe Karl Rove is all about, let's just grab the cash while people are watching the apocalypse.
They use the idea of the apocalypse, the fear of the apocalypse.
I think the only one in the inner circle that really believes in this Protestant fundamentalism for sure is Ashcroft. And he's not really involved in foreign policy.
Thank
God.
You have some people... American Jews, and you have Israelis in Israel who are benefiting by manipulating the born-again, apocalyptic, four horsemen type of mentality. And there are a lot of people in the American South and in places in the outside of the South, in places like Grand Rapids and Holland, Michigan, who believe in this stuff too. And the millennial predispensation.
Premillennial dispensationists.
Dispensational premillennialism.
Okay.
Which, by the way, the Calvinists in West Michigan did not really believe
that. Well, it's because you get into some specifics where they believe that a certain number of people are going to go zoop and they're going to disappear.
Yeah,
and
that's very much the minority
into
heaven. View.
That's the minority view, but I think you have a much larger number of American born-again Protestants in general who do believe in these apocalyptic scenarios, and many of them are in the South. And the South has become the most populous and most politically powerful part of the United States. And there's where you have the Republican Party really pandering to this.
Exactly.
And they can deny these people real economic growth, you know, for most of them, you know, as a population. They can, you know, they can cut funding to the public schools. They can cut welfare. They can deny them a future. But if they pander to this apocalyptic dream, then they can get what they want. And I think that that's what we're seeing, and I think it's becoming very dangerous because I think for business reasons, this administration and the Republicans,
they don't see a future for our children,
are invading the world, and they have enough of the American people behind them to push this.
The Calvins, they think that God has put these resources for us to use, and there will be the end of the world. And that's why we're supposed to use it. God gave us dominion over the animals and the earth and the plants and everything. And I've had conversations with these people, and I just can't believe that they think that we're supposed to use it all up, because when the end's here, it's here. It's all worked out.
And the meek will inherit the earth.
And the meek will inherit the earth, and that's fine with Bush, because they're going to Mars, right?
Yep. Right.
Well, I was going to, you know, it's good that you brought that up, because I was just talking about this to Steve before the show, that it's amazing that Bush and the Republican Party can pander to this apocalyptic vision of a certain religious bent in the born-again southern community, and that allows him to rape the environment, to drill for oil and gas in the national parks. Oh, well, he hoped, and maybe he'll still get his way. It allows him to gut the Clean Air Act. It allows him to seek a super NAFTA of the Western Hemisphere and to essentially open the borders to, you know, all sorts of uncontrollable immigration, because he's pandering to that and they can't see anything else. And I think
he wants the Mexican vote.
But Mark, the thing of it is too is that even people that are quite reactionary like Ross Perot and Pat Buchanan realize that NAFTA was a bad deal. But you're right, the average voter in the South doesn't seem to comprehend that.
Average voters in our part of Michigan don't seem to kind of
they're Republicans. You know.
I think the guys who lost their jobs at Electrolux are beginning to get the picture.
I brought my groceries
today because I wanted to say that the this whole apocalyptic thing does seem to be a diversion from the rise of a complete corporate feudalism in which we're going to have second-class citizens, and we're going to have the super rich.
Right.
I mean, we're practically there.
There'll be no middle class.
But this
there'll
new
no
immigration
class.
Bill
the middle
is about
class is
that.
Going right now. You're losing all your white-collar, upper-middle-class jobs. They don't even know yet. They haven't even felt it yet. There's, you know, we talk about it. But there will be no middle class, just like there isn't in Mexico.
Well, Let's take phone calls.
We're getting there.
We're at the point where what's happening behind the screen of apocalypse and the war and perhaps an overblown danger of terrorism is that 3 million jobs have been lost since Bush came into office. And yet we're seeing that syndrome again where economically signals show that there's an uptick. The GDP is going up, and this is we started this show 8 years ago.
But that's simply productivity, which means that the people that are working are working harder, and other people who don't have jobs.
As Bush said, the American people are the hardest working people in the world. And
he wouldn't know that, of course, by personal experience. But
no, but I think it's right, but it's not necessarily a good thing.
No,
because it
not.
Means that we're being
no.
driven like slaves.
Because you have people that are working hard, long hours and aren't getting paid, while other people don't have jobs.
Because
that's a double-edged sword, which hurts the working class.
It's because there's so much downward pressure on wages in the United States, and he's putting even more pressure on those wages by opening up the borders even more than they are. They haven't been enforcing the borders adequately for years.
And
for
what's
a reason.
Really, and what's really sad about it, I bet you if you talk to those people at Electrolux, I'm just guessing, at least 40% of them, maybe less, would blame unions, would blame government regulation. They blame everybody but the people that are responsible for their plight. And that's the capitalist owners.
A lot of them would blame themselves and say,
they
we
might
have
even
to
do that. It's my fault. You know, I didn't
if
work
a Mexican could do my job for $10 a day, then I must not have been earning the money I was making.
They get it to
it's not just Electrolux.
I'm sure not all of them think that, but there
I
are
40% at most.
It's an attitude that's definitely encouraged by a lot of preachers for one thing.
2,300 jobs were lost at Electrolux. It's going to Mexico.
Right.
1 year.
In 1 year. Bosch is leaving the country. That's in Grand Rapids also. And I just heard this past Sunday on the local NPR station from Grand Valley that Steelcase is announcing that it's going to phase out Grand Rapids operations and it's going to open up a third world manufacturing plant.
You're going to leave in Grand Rapids entirely?
They didn't say that, but they said that job growth will no longer be in Grand Rapids, and they say they are looking into foreign manufacturing.
Oh, sure.
So the jails weren't good enough for them, huh? Prison manufacture is somehow too shoddy. They need people who are really poor and in danger of starving.
We're going to go to our
They'll
second,
work hard.
We're going to go
starving
to,
people work like
we're
crazy.
We're going to go into our roll-in number two. As soon as we can. We will accept calls as soon as we come back. All right. Looks like rolling number two is about ready.
Run with that. Okay. BBC report from January.
Well, that's pretty wild.
So what really happened in Florida to hand George W. Bush victory in the presidential election? Did he win the state, or did something extraordinary happen in the run-up to the election that effectively delivered Florida for Bush? Newsnight has now unearthed evidence that 22,000 black and mostly Democratic voters were excluded from the electoral rolls by the private company which compiled them. That evidence will be presented at a special inquiry into the fairness of the ballot, which begins in Miami tomorrow. Greg Palast reports from Florida.
Washington. The Marine Band plays Hail to the Chief for George W. Bush, 43rd President of the United States. But in Florida, some are singing Hail to the Thief.
After hundreds of lives, fake alibis.
We're coming into Tallahassee, Jeb Bush country. And we want to know if George W. Bush won the election, or did brother Jeb steal it for him? Our investigation suggests that the answer lies in this shuttered building, the Capitol, and in a very expensive contract between Governor Jeb's Division of Elections and a private company named DBT, which accidentally wiped off the voter rolls thousands of Democratic voters.
18th floor, Division of Elections. We've come to ask Mr. Clayton Roberts, the director, a few questions.
Roberts agreed to talk, but became a bit uncomfortable when he learned that we had obtained the secret DBT contract and asked him if he knew what DBT were up to.
No, I didn't ask DBT to. They do what we contract them to do.
Uh-huh.
We have a statute that says we have to have a private company to do this. We put it out for bid. They got the bid. And I think I'm done with this interview.
Wait, well, let me just show you the contract, if I could, Mr. Roberts. Wait. It says here, right in the contract, that the verification is supposed to be done by DBT, that you paid them $4 million. It could look to other people, don't you think, that you paid $4 million to purchase this election for the Republican Party? 95% wrong on the felon list? Mr. Roberts, could you just please answer the question regarding the contract?
Instead, Mr. Roberts called out state troopers.
It's interesting here, huh?
Oh, man, never dull moment.
Okay. I don't know why I had to call the police. We hadn't gotten to our difficult questions yet.
The difficult questions are, did Governor Jeb Bush, his Secretary of State, Katherine Harris, and her Director of Elections, Clayton Roberts, know they had wrongly barred 22,000 black Democrat voters before the elections? after the elections, did they use their powers to prevent the counting of yet another 20,000 votes for Al Gore? The Democrats say the answers are yes and yes.
In almost any other country in the world, if this had occurred, there probably would have been riots. There probably would have been military troops throughout the streets.
Al Gore won the election. He won the popular vote, and he won the vote in Florida. And I think that that's pretty clear.
It wasn't done fairly. They shouldn't allow you to contest an election, then give you no way to contest it.
Jeb Bush promised his brother he was going to deliver Florida. And I believe that the Republicans, their strategy was at all costs, we deliver Florida.
Where people were taken out of polls and stopped from voting, yeah, I think that was not right. I think something, I smell a rat.
That's the redistricting wars. That's also from that same issue of The Nation. It's an article. Yeah, there we go. Could you talk to this, Stephen? This article by Sasha
Abramsky.
Abramsky.
Yep, Sasha Abramsky. Well, she's basically exposing what you may have heard some of on the national news when the Democrats fled the state of Texas and Ashcroft used Homeland Security money to track them down and
Texas
bring them
Rangers.
Back. Well, yeah, and there was. It was a big scandal. The Democrats were resisting an attempt by the Republicans to gerrymander the state. And gerrymandering has been going on for a long time, but the Republicans are taking it to new levels now. And the judiciary seems to be letting them get away with it so far, probably because judges are afraid that under one-party rule they'll have no career advancement if they stand in the way of this onslaught of against democracy.
Is this only
the Republicans know they can't win fairly, and so, as with the Harris DVD scandal
from 2000, well, that was a BBC 2001 January report. Yeah,
they have to rig the elections. This is a way of ensuring that there will be practically 13 new congressmen from Texas in the Republican category, and they do it by, you know, making neighborhoods
making
look
the
absurd
lines.
And then
going around
cutting out the voters that they believe they can never appeal to.
Yeah, we're a live call-in show. This is live, you know. See right down there, live. So we're open for calls from the audience. This is January 21st, and if you realize it's January 21st, you'll realize this is live. So you can call in responses to either the article or the old BBC report.
I just wanted to comment on something that I just noticed on the internet today, that on election night of 2000, the presidential election, that was November 4th, 2000, correct? At 10 o'clock that evening, Al Gore was leading George Bush in the state of Florida 83,000 to 62,000. Half an hour later, he had somehow lost, Gore that is, 16,000 votes. You know, apparently, they might have just said it was computer error. I think that the way things were going that night, if Bush had won in a landslide, they weren't going to resort to this sort of thing. But when Florida became the pivotal state,
it was.
I think everything was in place to steal this election. Do you remember when the networks all called the state for Gore about 8 o'clock? That was because, according to exit polls, which are usually pretty reliable, people thought they were voting for Al Gore and they were voting for Pat Buchanan, so the exit polls were correct. But what happened is George Bush went back to the mansion with Mommy and Daddy and Jeb, I guess, and they had to just sit there and say, well, we don't believe these reports. And remember what Bush said to Gore when Gore retracted his concession? George says, well, my little brother said he didn't say my little brother, but he said, my brother said I'm going to win this election. And Gore said, well, your little brother is not going to determine this. Well, apparently he did. I think the whole fix was in. Like I say,
it was.
It was assumed that Bush was going to win relatively by a relatively comfortable margin. But once Florida became the pivotal state, that was kind of the ace in the hole. And they did everything they could under the sun to manipulate that. You know, they had this judge there. Remember this judge, Sanders Sauls, that had all those ballots trucked up in a Ryder truck to take a look at to see if there were any irregularities? And then he says, I can find no irregularities in any of these ballots. He didn't look at a single one, and he was half asleep on the bench. And then, of course, the Florida Supreme Court overruled him, and as we know, eventually the U.S. Supreme Court.
And then there were Republican thugs, people who were
sent by Tom DeLay.
People were bussed in from out of state.
And they halted the
if the American
the recount
if the Republican
by punching,
Party
punching people out.
Punching
yeah.
people
the
out.
Last
yeah.
thought, if the Republican Party and George Bush were really moral people and not just political hacks that want to win an election at any cost, they would have just said, "Hey, we lost fair and square. Mr. Gore should be the president." But no, all they're interested in is winning. And now they've got a lot of these stupid Christian people believing that George Bush was chosen by God. George Bush wasn't chosen by God. He was chosen by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Now was, yeah, but it's George, I believe, sincerely believes he was chosen by God. But that's a very easy self-delusion. A lot of people think that.
I think he uses it as a... like a place to be. I don't think he really
believes. Well, I don't think it really matters.
His family was, they were Episcopalians from, you know, Anglicans from Connecticut. And then in 1985, he had some kind of alcohol binge, woke up and suddenly decided that Jesus Christ was his personal savior or something, and he was born again. But it made a lot more sense to be born again in Texas. And that's kind of, you know, what I've been trying to get at is that there's so much pandering to the cultural peculiarities of the South that the whole nation is being dominated and sort of driven into a bizarre direction.
I heard if you snort a kilo of cocaine that it will lead you straight to God. Look at all your rock stars.
No, stairway to heaven. Any other comments?
Even before the election day, they did things where they there was a bunch of people, minorities mostly, that were not allowed to vote because they had gotten thrown into this thing where they had felonies and stuff, but they weren't. They were trafficked and
they
stuff.
They were scrubbed.
There
exactly.
were tons of that stuff. They did that poll-pushing thing where they called me, hey, if you knew that...
John McCain had
whoever was doing this and had illegitimate black children.
That was in South Carolina. Yeah,
they
South
also
Carolina
sent out the flyers
dirty politics.
In the poorer communities saying, you know, don't forget to vote on November 5th, which is the 4th, but be sure you have your taxes paid up and your tickets paid off, and especially all your warrants paid up, you know, to scare people away from the polls.
They started
even before the whole thing, and they still couldn't get it.
They had state troopers all lined up.
All over.
There was Seminole County where there were a lot of military personnel who were official residents of that county, and there was a state representative, Corrine something, from Florida, and she testified to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission at about back then, and she said that the Republicans set up their own office, the Republican Party, in the voters' registrar office of Seminole County, and they actually were allowed by the registrar to have free access to all the files of the voter registration, and they fixed all the absentee ballots.
They fixed thousands of absentee ballots that
had been incorrectly done that would have been discounted. We're ready for the final roll-in, which actually relates to exactly what Dennis was talking about, the felons. And this is the real clincher about the DBT scandal. If we could run that, please call in anyone who's watching that has.
Where's our callers?
Yeah.
Are we making you mad enough? Get on the phone.
What about the apocalypse? This is the apocalypse.
Roll in number three.
You don't notice it because you're in it.
You left out the Y, Diane.
We're ready for roll in number three.
It's like three. Renaissance period. People didn't know they were in a Renaissance period. They were
Here we go.
They were in the Dark Ages, did they?
They didn't know they were in the Dark Ages.
We'll be taking calls.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go.
We'll be taking calls when we come back. So
this is Database Technologies. This is the company that the state of Florida hired to remove the names of people who committed serious crimes from the voter list. I've obtained a document from inside this outfit. It's marked confidential and trade secret. It says that the company was paid millions of dollars to make telephone calls to verify that they actually got the right names, but they didn't. There's nothing in the state of Florida files that says that they actually made these telephone calls. So the question remains, why did the Republican leaders of this state pay millions for a list that stopped thousands of innocent Democrats from voting? The first list from DBT included 8,000 names from Texas supplied by George Bush's state officials. They said they were all felons, serious criminals barred from voting. As it turns out, almost none were. Local officials raised a ruckus, and DBT issued a new list naming 58,000 felons. But the one county which went through the whole expensive process of checking the new list name by name found it was still 95% wrong.
They were going to verify to telephone.
Reverend Willie Whiting was one of those removed from the voter rolls after DBT wrongly labeled him a serious criminal.
I've never spent a night in jail. Never have.
You ever busted?
No, I had a speeding ticket probably 25, 30 years ago, I guess. Somewhere like that, but that's about it. I'm not.
You think you should be allowed to vote if you had a speeding ticket?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
The Florida legislature likes to see young prisoners paraded in front of the Capitol in old cavalry uniforms.
Me and Superman had a fight.
Me and Superman had a fight.
I hit him in the head with some kryptonite.
And more often than not in America, the prisoner's color is black. Because of the way DBT generated the list, every genuine black felon in the United States could knock out every black voter in Florida with the same surname and similar date of birth. And that's why the NAACP is suing Florida for violating voters' civil rights.
Governor Bush, Secretary of State Catherine Harris, Clay Roberts is the head of the Florida Department of Elections, all knew or should have known in advance that certain election policies and practices would disproportionately impact low-income areas and in particular black citizens and other minority citizens, and that this would disproportionately impact Democratic voters based on historical voting trends.
Thank you, Florida!
Altogether, it looks like this cost the Democrats about 22,000 votes in Florida, which George Bush won by only 537 votes. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission is also on the trail. They called in Bush, Harris, and Roberts. Bush did not convince his critics.
Resign already. You screwed up this state. You hope to steal this ballot.
I love you, man.
Commissioner Edley and his colleagues will be in Miami tomorrow to hear from voters who are wrongly disqualified.
If you're going to do it, by all means, as a matter of due process, as a matter of fairness, it's got to be done with excruciating care. It's a democracy. The vote counts. There's a lot of public concern that the contractor who was selected to do this is a firm that seems to have ties to the Republican Party.
And they will be putting our evidence to database technologies. Their vice president, James Lee, told Newsnight that manual verification by telephone calls does not mean ringing people up to check they've got the right person. So, were they paid $4 million to produce a list which they knew would name thousands of innocent black people? In fact, DBT told Newsnight that Clayton Roberts and the state of Florida wanted there to be more names than were actually verified as being a convicted felon. So, did they use their powers to prevent the count of 20,000 additional votes for the Democrats?
Welcome back to Oh Say Can You See, our live portion. You've been seeing a BBC report from January, BBC TV. We got this over the internet. As far as we know, we're the first people to play this in the United States. I never heard about this until about, 4 or 5 days ago. Some people heard something about database technologies only yesterday here in Grand Rapids on NPR. Stephen, some comments here.
Well, it's been highly underplayed in the press. On the Grand Rapids press yesterday, it did at the end of an article about the Civil Commission or the Civil Rights Commission's report that's causing such a fervor that claims that many people were prevented from voting, especially in black districts, especially in Democratic districts. But the the Grand Rapids Press mentioned the problem with the felons list. It didn't mention 20,000 people who were eligible to vote who were prevented from voting, and it didn't mention that those were almost completely black and that they were mostly Democratic. I don't see how you can put any other construction on this evidence except that this was a cynical attempt by the Republican administration of Florida to steal an election.
Yeah, well, how, you know, what are the chances that Bush's government in Texas is going to pay this corporation in Britain to do a list of this sort, and it's 95% inaccurate? And then,
welcome back. We're live. We have a call from L.A. Dave.
Before we take it, can I just say that we should certainly be looking forward to more of this kind of chicanery. Okay. I heard that the company that was hired to do the electronic voting booths in California and in Florida are basically promising to deliver the election to Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Documents have come out where they have memos showing how, now that it's a computer-run system, how they can do this.
Sure.
Well, yeah, expect
it again, people.
Expect stealing the election, because what else can you expect from George Bush and his brother and his father and his friends? Expect more war, expect more pandering to the apocalypse, expect more pandering to Southern, you know, extreme racism,
Red
which is on the rise, along with apologies.
Expect more companies
for the
to go
Civil
to
war,
Mexico and China and Indonesia.
Yes,
more
expect
globalization.
More
expect
jobs.
More fear tactics on you and your family.
Except more, expect more poverty, more downward pressure on your wages.
But don't expect to be on Mars anytime soon.
No.
Because
no.
You can't afford it.
No, that's
don't
right.
Expect Moon Base Alpha to be built tomorrow either. He just has no intention of doing any of that stuff.
It's interesting he didn't mention it in the State of Union address yesterday.
Okay, L.A.
I mean,
Dave.
Why'd he make such a big deal about a week ago and now he didn't even mention it?
L.A. Dave. We have
hello?
Hello,
L.A. Dave.
Yeah, this is L.A. Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, this show is riveting tonight, gentlemen. It's fabulous. And I was just, you know, I've heard a lot about this election fixing and all this stuff, but, I mean, maybe you guys could give me some feedback. I'm thinking that a big part of the problem is still that we've just got the two major parties going. And there's just not enough people getting out and raising hell about these issues. I mean, we can sit and talk about them all day long. It's a great show. But unless there's some more activism going on, some other political parties in the arena, I don't know where we're going to get. You guys comment on that?
Well, 4 years ago, we were saying the same thing, Dave. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to vote for a Democrat for president for the first time in my life. And, you know, any of these candidates, I'm not going to let myself be a splinter this time.
If the Democrats nominate an honest man with Down syndrome, I'd vote for him rather than have George Bush be president again. Okay, Dennis.
That's not a very nice thing to say about people with Down syndrome. Okay. You know, Dave, that's right. It's great to be active and stuff like that, but when you have the powers to be that are actually controlling the votes and skimming right off the top and stuff, there's not a whole lot you can do when the numbers come up bad for you. And I say the best thing we can do, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, I'm way more Democrat than Republican, but we got to get Bush out of there, and that's all there is to it. And I think Clark's our man. What, Rhodes Scholar, number one at West Point.
He's multilingual, doesn't he?
And he's cute as a button. He is. I just love him. If you see him on talking, he's just, I think that American people will fall in love with him. I think it's our best bet.
You're not talking about Edwards now, are you?
No. Oh. I'm talking about...
My God, Michael Moore is on the telephone?
No.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, God, you had to... Look, I think Steve Peed.
Michael Moore. L.A. Dave, go ahead.
Guys, I just wanted to say thanks for getting with me here. The show's been riveting, as I said, and I'll continue to be a big fan. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, L.A. Dave. We were given a message that Michael Moore is going to be in Grand Rapids, and it came up just now because Michael Moore, of course, is known to support General Clark. And
Is he really?
There are quite a few people who are leaning his way. He seems like someone who could... could beat George Bush. Of course, he used to be Republican, and this is a controversial point. Michael Moore will be in Grand Rapids at Fountain Street Church. The event is actually, Michael Moore supports Clark, but Michael Moore's movie will be in Grand Rapids free at Fountain Street Church on Saturday, January 31st at 7:30 p.m.
Which movie?
The movie will be Dude, Where's My Country?
He made a movie out of the book already.
He made a movie out already?
I think you mean Bowling for Columbine.
Oh.
The one he won the Oscar for last
year.
Well,
he didn't.
You know what? They must mean Bowling for Columbine because Dude, Where's My Country is a book. As we, you know, okay.
So all Michael right. Moore supports Wesley
Clark.
Is he
going to be there?
Oh, wait. I've been told that he will be at Fountain Street Church in person. So
what day?
The first point was right, and this is his
Saturday
Dude, Where's My
January.
Country book tour, I guess, that he's on. And, of course, we covered that in our last show.
It'll be the 31st, the day before the Super Bowl.
I like that Michael Moore. He's very angry.
Yeah. Live call-in show.
Don't let that turn you off.
This is the 21st of January, 2004. We're still open for calls. I'm going to start going for wrap-up statements here from you guys.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think Howard Dean may have been set up to lose by the Republicans. They were hoping he'd get the nomination. They're practically begging for him to be nominated. And I think the Democrats may be realizing, as Steve just said, how important it is to get Bush out of there. Are actually going to try and unite behind someone that can actually beat Bush, like a Clark or a Kerry or an Edwards. Someone who can possibly, and I don't know about Kerry, but I think Clark or Edwards could possibly peel off at least one or two southern states.
Kerry looks like the Crypt Keeper. I just don't think he's
well,
got
I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
No, I think it has a lot to do with it.
Except
you
he
know
is
it
skull
does.
And bones.
You know it does. I'd like to say
bones.
That it doesn't, but it has a lot to do with it.
Well, he and Bush are both from Skull and Bones. That's something to keep in mind.
Well, at least he went to Vietnam.
Yeah. Right?
Like, yeah, that's a great thing. I want to say, so we need to support anybody that can get Bush out of there. The Democrats have to rally around somebody. If you've never done anything, I'll tell you what, you're losing your jobs. Electrolux, Butternut, Herman Miller, the list goes on and on just for right around here. I don't even know what's going on in the rest of the country. There's so much stuff goes on every day, you can't even keep up with it. And you can't. And we've got to do something about it. What Bushies have done to us in the last, it hasn't even been 4 years, is just insane.
3 years, three million
years,
jobs.
Have it's gone. Insane. We're so far in the black. The rest of the country hates us. So, a policeman was telling me that every day we're in Iraq, the Al-Qaeda group grows by 50%.
Who told you that?
As a bailiff.
I think that's probably
so
an exaggeration.
That. But you know what? While we're not watching what's going on, it probably is an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But you know, we're
it
not making
does
any,
grow,
we're not making
yes.
any friends by being there. We're not making any, you know, certainly, well, maybe with anybody who's going to make any money off it.
But we are making friends with Gaddafi.
Look at it this way.
What's up with that?
When we're in Iraq
Gaddafi
and saying that they can't have open, free elections, they have to have a caucus system, that sounds like Republican chicanery
Clark.
To me. And if I were an Iraqi, I'd be mad too. Stephen,
and now it's
last
time for
words.
Us to dance.
Stephen.
Gaddafi wanted to come in from the cold for years. We've been holding them out. The North Koreans want to come in from the cold, too.
Shut up, sure they do.
Oh, what is they want? A non-aggression treaty.
So
they said they'll give up their nuclear weapons
no.
for a non-aggression pact.
If you re-elect Bush, American people expect more, more job loss, and that even includes you upper-middle class people, because not only are you next, it's happening to you right now. Your high-tech jobs are going to India, to Southeast Asia. Doctors, what's happening to your income?
Certainly,
it's going down.
Yeah.
Certainly, they expect to get a lot more preaching from Bush.
Oh, hell.
Bye-bye.